waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. So on Friday, President Trump did something that didn't get a lot of attention. I don't remember a big photo op. It's not one that I would expect. But I don't remember a whole lot of hoopla. But, you know, Donald Trump did issue a proclamation that said on Sunday, April the 2nd of this year, they would recognize that they would recognize World Autism Awareness Day. And, you know, I'm going, really, I don't know that Donald Trump would, you know, jump in the middle of that. But OK, in his proclamation, he called upon all of us, all Americans, to learn a little bit more about the signs of autism, to improve early diagnosis, understand the challenges faced by those with autism spectrum disorders, and to do what we can to support individuals with autism spectrum disorders and their families. And I go, you know, wow, sounds almost presidential. Sounds like something a president would say. I'm here to talk a little bit about that. I've asked Matthew Chapman to come talk with us. He's a contributor over at ShareBlue. He's got an article on this very topic. Matthew, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So, you know, I saw this. I'm going, is Donald Trump turning the new leaf? Are we seeing something presidential out of him?
Well, I mean, in one sense, I think he's trying, but in many ways, the proclamation he issued just reveals how ignorant he is of the way that people on the spectrum live. Because he put a lot of emphasis on the need to find a cure. I can tell you this, most people on the spectrum, we don't want to be cured. We like the way we are. We want to be accepted. We don't want people to view us as though we have some sort of disease.
Yeah, like there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, sort of the way that Trump has worded this announcement, is just he makes it sound as though he thinks life would be better for everyone if we were just different people.
If we were just like him. Nasty and mean. But here's the thing. I mean, could you make an argument that he views himself as a fixer, that, you know, this is a problem and we're going to get in, roll our sleeves up, and we're going to fix it?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, it shows his attitude that, you know, every problem has a simple solution and people are just idiots. They can't solve it. Only he can solve it. And I mean, you see the exact same thing with the wall.
Yeah, I mean, or healthcare or anything. And who knew healthcare could be so complicated? Who knew this stuff was hard?
Oh, boy.
No, I mean, that's the thing. And, you know, this first 2 months, I got to be honest, has been the longest 2 months of my life doing this job because, well, I mean, it's a constant, you're just a constant barrage of insanity, insecurity, instability. You name it, it's just been this constant, just stimulus on overdrive.
You're telling me. I mean, every time I wake up in the morning, I just wonder what new crazy thing has he tweeted at 3 a.m. or you know, what is the latest insane policy that his administration's come up with, or even, you know, lately, today, what about all the insane things that he's repealing under the Congressional Review Act, like, you know, broadband privacy or no shooting wolves from helicopters.
Well, here's the thing, and you go back to the internet privacy thing, and you're an internet guy. Yeah. I mean, that's your world. How is that going to affect our lives? Because I don't think most Americans really get how invasive this could become in their everyday lives.
Absolutely. I mean, for years, broadband companies have had this sort of leeway to, you know, sell our personal data to who knows who. It's why we get bombarded with all these eerie ads that are sort of tailored to things that we don't want other people to know about us. And, you know, Obama was primed to restore some sanity to this system by making it so that these companies couldn't sell this data without our consent. And suddenly Congress steps in and says, nope, we want to make it so that the providers can keep doing this, and we also want to ban any president from ever signing, like, creating a rule about this ever again. And Trump was like, all right, piece of paper, I'll sign it.
And again, you know, it's, hey, something to sign. And that's what I got to be honest. I don't think an awful lot of our president, you know, intellectually. So I got to think that a lot of it is, oh, boy, photo op, something to sign. And that's about as deep as it goes.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't think he really understands the implications of pretty much anything he's signing. I mean, that was driven home pretty clearly by the other day when he just sort of was so stressed out that he left the Oval Office without even actually signing the executive order he was there for.
Yeah. And it was kind of funny watching Mike Pence run after him like a puppy dog.
Oh, my God. That was, I mean, it's been one nightmare of a roller coaster these last couple months, but I have to admit I had a good laugh about that.
I think we all did, but here's the reality. I mean, you know, these last couple of months, you know, fortunately, none of the really, really ugly stuff has happened yet. It's coming, but it hasn't happened yet because of just how dysfunctional I think the Republican Party is. My concern is that they eventually come and gel and cohese around the idea that they're in charge, and we start seeing the steamroller. And I fear that happens this Friday when they invoke the nuclear option to get their Supreme Court justice put on the court.
I'm absolutely worried about that, too. And, you know, I think one thing that's really important to do is contradict the narrative they're going to have about it. I mean, already you see, you know, all these Republicans and a lot of people in the media saying, oh, you know, we have no choice now. The Democrats have forced our hand. This is exactly, you know, Harry Reid created a precedent and we have no choice but to follow it. That's not actually true.
No, it's not.
I mean, Reid himself was following a precedent actually set in 1957 by Richard Nixon, which is that any rule change to the Senate that's not at the start of a term requires a two-thirds vote by the Senate unless it is a point of order regarding a serious systematic violation of Senate rules. And that's exactly what was happening back then. If you'll recall, there were all these there were so many filibusters of judicial nominees that the courts didn't actually have enough justices to hear all the cases. It was a constitutional crisis.
Yep. And we still don't, to be honest. I mean, there still aren't enough judges to fill those federal seats yet, because the Republicans have really done a masterful job of not allowing any Democrats to put justices on the bench, which is kind of ironic given Lindsey Graham's statement that the Democrats get all their judges but Republicans don't get any, and that's why we have to have this nuclear option. Just kind of, you know, kind of mind-blowing.
I think it's pretty telling that Lindsey Graham did a full flip-flop. Just a few months ago, he was saying that he would fight any change to the filibuster.
You got to wonder. I mean, you know, at some point, is there anything, and I don't know, did you watch the news, the press conference they had where they were all slapping each other on the back and yucking it up? I just go, you know, do you guys not have, you know, like a six-month memory? Because it seemed like,
I know,
you know,
I know.
They were talking out of all sides of their face.
Yeah, I know, and now they think they can tell the public, oh, you know, this is exactly the same thing. We're just doing what Harry Reid did, and they're not.
No.
There's no systematic constitutional violation that Senate Democrats are doing. This is one judge who the Democrats object to for specific reasons.
Well, and there's a bunch of reasons. I mean, outside of the fact that he's an extreme judge. I mean, he's one of these, you know, I think would take us back 100 years. The other part is this is a stolen seat. This should be something where they make this stand. And as far as there's, you know, because you're right, I've seen this frame was, well, they've given us no choice. We have to do this. You do have a choice. You could negotiate. You could sit down and go, okay, if he's not acceptable, how do we get someone that we all agree to? That's the point of having the consent part of this. That's the part of having the 60-vote threshold so that you don't have wild extremes on the court.
Yes, exactly. And that's exactly what Harry Reid did when he was in charge of the Senate. He spent 4 years trying to broker gentlemen's agreements from high-ranking Senate officials like Lamar Alexander. He asked them, you know, what would you accept in a nominee? And they said, we're not going to let you pick anyone.
Yeah.
We want the D.C. court to remain stacked in favor of Republicans, and that's it.
And how do you make a gentleman's agreement with, well, the folks we saw on camera the other day who, you know, just bold-faced lies? I mean, we've never confirmed a justice during an election year, yet there's one sitting on the court right now.
Yep, and and 13 others throughout history.
So let me ask you, I mean, because you and I and a lot of the people that I know, this is the stuff that we every day get up and we live and breathe, and this is our passion, this is our world. Do you think this is playing in regular America where people have lives and they actually get up and live those lives? Do you think that this is something that's important to them?
Well, I think that that especially the sort of politics that happens in Washington is on the, you know, immediately when it happens, it can be a bit arcane and removed from one's lives. But eventually all this stuff filters down into how, you know, local races are running. You know the old saying, all politics is local.
Right.
The legislators who are closer to the people are the ones who enact the policies that people more immediately notice. And you know, over time, the federal folks can set the tone for them, and it can be the other way around, too.
What's interesting, though, and I think you're right. I think what you see in Washington does set the tone for what happens locally. I know here where I live in Pennsylvania, there's a gubernatorial candidate who I've just been calling Baby Trump because, you know, he's doing all of the things that that Trump tried to do, and he's trying to be Trump just without the charisma. And just a very angry, rich guy who made his money off the taxpayers. Just a real angry guy, but he's trying to do the Trump thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my parents, I believe in their state, they live in Virginia, there's this one guy in the Republican primary who's trying to do the same thing.
So, again, you come back to this because, you know, you look at what worked for Trump, a rich guy telling poor people that he cared about them, and then evidently buying it. I got to wonder, at what point do they stop? And does that whole shtick stop working where we look to the wealth class as our saviors when we have to realize that, you know, they're the reason that the mass of the working class is in the desperation that they're actually in?
Well, I mean, there's not going to be one thing. It's got to be a lot of little things that slowly work to turn the tide. I mean, and I think we're starting to see some progress in that regard. Because, I mean, I don't know if there's any scientific polling about it yet, but I have seen a lot of Republicans saying they're furious about the broadband privacy ruling. I mean, obviously, without polls, we wouldn't want to read too much into that, but right. Apparently. This has been plastered all over all kinds of pro-Trump message boards that they're furious.
Yeah, and when that goes away, there's also the net neutrality, which, you know, I've talked to people on all sides of the political spectrum who, you know, unless you're a corporatist who goes, hey, we can sell this, most people think we should have an open internet where everything is treated relatively on the same level, and that we shouldn't be paying the big corporations shouldn't be able to pay to get our eyes all the time.
Exactly. I remember a couple years ago when the net neutrality rules were first being drafted, and Ted Cruz took to Facebook to complain that net neutrality was Obamacare for the internet. And tons of his own Facebook followers smacked him down and said, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life.
That is pretty dumb. And I do remember it. But again, a lot of things that came out of Ted Cruz's mouth, pretty stupid.
But here's the thing. That's why we're looking at all of this stuff.
But you pile all this stuff up and you look at all this in its totality. And at this point, you know, just 2 months in, I can't imagine that there's anybody who's still looking at Trump going, yep, I'm sure glad I made that choice. And in fact, the most recent Time poll has 52% of the country saying, you know, Trump's an embarrassment.
Yeah. I've heard that his numbers have even slipped among rural voters, too, which are supposed to be his base.
Well, do you think that had a lot to do with the Affordable Care Act, where they finally realized that the Affordable Care Act and Obamacare were actually the same thing, and two, they were benefiting from it, and three, it was going to get ripped away from them? Do you think that had a little bit to do with it?
I think it might have. I mean, look at the polling for the American Health Care Act. It was 17% supporting it. Like, it is very hard to find something so universally loathed.
Yeah, I mean, I think herpes.
It's not every day that you see, pro Koch brothers groups and, Elizabeth Warren on the same side against the bill.
Good point.
And you saw that right there. And, you know, the most insane thing is that Trump's trying again. I mean, the White House is supposed to be releasing a new version of the plan tonight, which is, and already some of the stuff that's leaked out of it is insane. A Like, for instance, the new plan would allow insurers to deny people access to mental health treatment on the grounds of them having mental health problems.
But here's the thing. I mean, we're going to go back to the old days of pay or die, and you know that. So, you know, is it a surprise that this is in there? I mean, is it any surprise that this is what they want, that the Freedom Caucus and the extreme part of the Republican Party didn't support the AHCA because it wasn't horrible enough? I mean, are we surprised by any of that?
No, we're not at all surprised by it. Although I think although obviously now more than ever, it's important for everyone to call their congressman and complain still. Those complaints were a big part of why the original first pass of it died, and we can kill it again.
Right. And that's the important thing to remember, because where I wanted to kind of finish up with this, because the reality is you look at the power of we the people. We killed the ACA, the AHCA. We killed the horrible health care act that the Republicans put forth. We've forced the Democrats to do what they wanted to do and filibuster Gorsuch. We, through our power, our effort, our phone calls, our letters, our emails, all of that, moved the political needle. And I think that's something that we need to really hammer on.
It absolutely is. I've just been so heartened by the sheer volume and intensity of the resistance over the past couple of months. We've managed to achieve, frankly, more than I could have hoped for, and we've got to achieve more. We got to keep going. If we keep going the way I've seen us fighting so far, we can hobble Trump's midterm.
And that's really the goal. I mean, getting to that midterm is one of the goals. But for me right now, where I think we need to be spending a little bit of energy is targeting a couple of Republicans. A couple of the Republicans in the Senate, and really hammer on them right now not to allow the nuclear option to happen. To actually stand up
Definitely.
And say, no, we're not going to blow up the Senate. We're not going to undo 100 years of rules and law. We're just not going to do it. And they need the push from us to give them the courage to do it.
Let's start with Flake and Heller. They're the ones who are actually up for re-election in 2 years.
Yeah, did you see Flake give his little speech, though? I mean, he came up and he basically gave a couple of words so he could get his picture taken, and he booked out of the frame really quickly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he has no courage, none at all. Our hope is to persuade him that he should be more scared of getting voted out of office.
Yeah, it's like we've been saying, it's the fact that citizens have lifted their head and they are now paying attention and no longer saying, well, you can't fight City Hall. No, you can. And as we've seen, there have been instances where we've won.
Definitely.
So final word, what's the marching order for the next week? What's the marching order for the next coming days?
Our immediate goal, keep the pressure on the Senate to not change the rules and do our best to highlight the Republicans' attempt to bring back their fraudulent health care reform. Make sure that idea gets laughed out.
Yeah. Smack that down. And then with that, the next debacle that's coming, which I'm sure is going to be a horrible tax plan that's going to give millions of dollars to the wealthy at the expense of the poor. And what do you expect from bullies? It is what they do. Matthew Chapman, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Always great talking with you.
Thank you so much.
I look forward to having you back again real soon. Let's take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.